As the trial of Chad and Lori Daybell nears closer, specifically Lori in the coming weeks, we're trying to give you as much context on the case as possible. So we're going back into the archives all the way to 2020, August 3rd and 4th, for the preliminary hearing of Chad Daybell, parts 1 through 13, so you can hear where it all begins in the courtroom and where it will pick up as the trial of Lori Daybell begins very soon. This is that hearing. Let's go to the courtroom.
All right. Thank you. Please be seated. We'll go back on the record here in State v. Daybell. The state had just finished its direct examination of Mr. Dean, and we took a brief recess in the afternoon. Mr. Pryor, do you wish to cross-examine this witness?
If I may, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Dean, can you give me the range of when the messages started from what you gathered from the phone and when, and obviously you've already provided us with the end date of October 18th, 2019. What was the start date of those messages that you started to review, sir?
Are you referring to the text messages, SMS only?
Well, at this point, we're going to get through all of the varieties. If you want to just provide that with the start of all of those, I'd appreciate that. We can cut this a little shorter then.
Sure. That information, I think, is in the report that I generated after the review. If I could be definitely accurate if I were able to consult that. Otherwise, I would just be giving estimations.
Okay.
There's
I do have the report. And can we have the bailiff provide the report to refresh his recollection?
Mr. Pryor, do you want that handed to the witness?
I do, Judge. All right. Hand the witness the report to refresh his recollection.
The report?
The judge wants to give him instructions on that.
Okay. The report will be handed to the witness. Witness, if you want to review your report and then let us know when you're ready, we'll have you turn the report upside or over on its back so that you can't see it, and then we'll have you testify to what you know. Take your time. You may. Mr. Dean, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Have you had your memory refreshed by looking at your notes?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Pryor, you may inquire.
Would you please tell me what the start date of those messages was, sir?
The start date of the SMS messages that were on the device was July 29th, 2019.
And then again, the end messages were October?
The end of the outgoing messages was October 18th, 2019.
Is there a difference between the outgoing and incoming messages dates?
So, in other words, they're up until October 18th, messages, SMS messages were both received and sent from the device, sent being outgoing. And then after the 18th of October, there were no further outgoing or sent messages from the device.
Were there any incoming messages to the device?
There were.
And when did that date end, sir?
There, I believe in the days following late October and also into November, I would say that there were periodic incoming calls to the device up until the seizure of the phone.
Okay. Do you have an idea about how many?
I'd say between 10 to 20, just an estimation.
Were those included in your report?
Not all of them.
I'm sorry. Were those included in your report?
Not all of them. I made reference to items that appeared on the phone with dates after the 18th in general, but I do not comment in detail about the numbers and timestamps of them.
So why don't we talk about the emails in the same range? If you could give me the identifying dates on the range of the emails and then all of the other forms of messages that came in, I would appreciate if you could go through those.
During the entire length of the activity of the phone or just after the 18th?
No, what I want is that there were, you talked about text messages, you talked about emails, and you talked about instant messages. Were there any other forms of messages that came through that phone?
Not that I can think of at this time.
Okay. At this time, or are you still looking into that?
The device can be reviewed in future, but at this point, I'm not aware of any further categories of messages.
Okay, so let's go back to my original one of my original questions. Just now give me the date of range for the emails now, please.
May I consult the...
Absolutely, please do. Take whatever time you need, sir.
For the record, the witness is reviewing his report to refresh his recollection.
Did you refresh your recollection?
I did. So in this report, I don't include all the entirety of the items. It would be a very, very long report. What I did was I included selected items. So I have the date range for the selected items, but I do not have the date range for all the emails total on the device.
And the decision to decide which items you're going to include was that your decision, was it not?
It was.
So the determination as to whether you thought it was important or not in terms of which emails you provided to the prosecutor and ultimately to me was based on what you thought was important. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. And what I'd like to ask you is that if we go from July 29th to October 18th, we're looking, sir, at approximately 80 days. And your testimony where you said that these were long messages and that you found that unusual, that in an 80-day period, this message was a lengthy message. So you're making the determination that based on an 80-day period...
Judge, I'd object to the form of the question. That's getting into a compound.
Well, I'm trying to explain, Judge, and if I...
I think you need to be able to be asked one question at a time.
Okay.
Mr. Pryor, I'll let you lay a little bit of foundation for your question, but if you can be more concise and limit it to one question.
The range for the emails was 80 days, correct?
For the SMS messages?
SMS messages was 80, and the emails. The SMS messages was 80 days, is that correct?
Around 80 days, yes.
Okay, and in 80 days you made the determination that this was the most lengthy of the messages, is that correct?
Yes. Okay. From between Chad and Tammy.
Right.
Sent from Chad to Tammy.
Now, what other, were there instant messages in this as well?
There were text messages or SMS messages. There were multimedia messages. And there were emails that also had content. And I don't believe, there were indications of Facebook activity on the device and the use of Facebook Messenger.
Okay.
But the content, as far as content of Facebook chats or any other chat messaging items, no, I'm not aware of any of those.
And what was the range again of the multimedia?
The multimedia messages, I'd have to consult my report one more time.
Okay, go ahead. Multimedia?
July 17th to the 25th of October 2019.
Now I'd like to direct your attention back to, and obviously you didn't pull the Facebook messaging. That would be very difficult, would it not?
It simply wasn't on the device. And if I may correct myself, the beginning, the first MMS message on the phone was 7:31. I misspoke just now.
Okay, that's fine, thank you. On the message from Chad to Tammy at 11:53:27, could you, Judge, does he have the exhibit up there? Could we get him the exhibit?
Which exhibit are you reserving? Exhibit 31?
I believe it's 31, Your Honor.
The witness will be handed Exhibit 31.
Your Honor, I believe he still has it.
I think he still does, too. Okay. Does that say 31 on it, Mr. Dean?
Again, could you do me the favor of rereading the message of 11:53:27 again for me, please?
Yes. Would you like just the text of the message, or you timestamp, or?
Well, we've already established 11:53 on September 9th, I think. I think that's clear. So if you would just read the content of the message, I would appreciate it, sir.
Well, I've had an interesting morning. I felt I should burn all of the limb debris by the fire pit before it got too soaked by the coming storms. While I did so, I spotted a big raccoon along the fence. I hurried and got my gun, and he was still walking along. I got close enough that one shot did the trick. He is now in our pet cemetery. Fun times.
So, your purpose today is to obtain any messages on Tammy Daybell's phone, correct? And provide us with information about messages that were on Tammy Daybell's phone, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Your purpose today is not to decide whether or not wood was burned in a fire pit, correct?
No.
You don't have any information as to
whether... Judge, I'd object. This is argumentative.
It's not argumentative, Judge. I'm trying to lay down exactly what the scope of what he's trying to do today. I mean, I think I ought to be able to inquire that he's here, Judge, just to recite what a text message is and how he obtained it.
I want to clarify that he's not suggesting to anyone that Chad Daybell did not burn firewood in a fire pit, and I think I need to be able to go into that.
I think it's pretty clear from the testimony and the foundation that's been laid by this witness that he works at an FBI lab and then he analyzed the phone. I think it's also clear that he's not trying to testify as to what those messages are. He's just saying what was found on the phone. So I agree it's unnecessary, and I think it is argumentative.
Okay. I have nothing further, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Redirect, Mr. Rammel.
Nothing based on that, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Dean, for appearing today. If you'll hand that exhibit to the bailiff here, and then if you'll hand that report back to Mr. Rammel. The court notes that that report was not marked and it's not part of the evidence. You can be excused. Mr. Dean, thank you for being here today. Mr. Rammel or Wood, do you have any other witnesses?
No, Your Honor.
The state rests then. Mr. Pryor, do you desire to call any witnesses?
There'll be no presentation today, Your Honor. Thank you.
Do the parties wish to make closing arguments?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Wood or Mr. Rammel allow you to do so.
Thank you.
If you'll please stand, make sure you pull that microphone close to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm aware this court is very well aware of what the burden of proof is for a preliminary hearing due to the wide audience it reaches. I'd just point out that Idaho criminal rule states that if the court finds that an offense has been committed and that there is probable or sufficient cause to believe the defendant committed the offense, the court must bind that defendant over to answer in district court. And so, Your Honor, just a brief recap. On November 25th, the Rexburg Police Department was notified of a missing child, J.J. Vallow. The next day, their investigation begins. What they discover in the course of that investigation is that there's another missing child, Tylee Ryan, and they discover that the last day she's seen is September 8th in Yellowstone National Park. They find evidence that on September 9th, Chad Daybell sent a text to his then-wife, Tammy Daybell, at 11:53 in the morning about burning limb debris and burying a raccoon in his pet cemetery. That very same morning, Alex Cox's phone pings in that same area, that pet cemetery area on Chad Daybell's property. On June 9th, Tylee Ryan, who we've identified through DNA, is found buried, burnt, dismembered portions of her in a green melted bucket, buried with animals in the pet cemetery. Through that investigation, they find that the last known sighting of J.J. Vallow was September 22nd. Similarly, on September 23rd, Alex Cox's phone pings on Chad Daybell's property. Near those pings, where those pings are located, on the north side of Chad Daybell's property, on June 9th, JJ is found, wrapped in a garbage bag with another white garbage bag wrapped around his head, bound in duct tape. Your Honor, for the court to find probable cause of concealment of a felony, it must find that the evidence concealed would tend to be evidence in a felony proceeding. That's the test given by state law, by case law in State v. Patilla and State versus Urimola. This court, as the finder of fact, is entitled to a reasonable inference based on the state of the bodies of J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan, that they were victims of a homicide. This court can also take note of through the evidence presented, that both Chad Daybell and his wife, Lori Daybell, were aware that Lori Vallow Daybell was charged with desertion, two felony counts of desertion of a minor child in Madison County. And clearly, the location and welfare of these bodies was evidence in that felony proceeding. Those bodies were concealed. One of them was destroyed. They were located on Chad Daybell's property. Alex Cox, whose phone pinged near those locations, became his brother-in-law less than 2 months later when Chad married Lori Vallow. For the court to find probable cause of conspiracy on these charges, on counts 3 and 4, or on counts 2 and 4, it must find probable cause of at least one overt act and an agreement. State law in Idaho is very clear through State versus Gallatin and through the Idaho jury criminal jury instructions that an agreement need not be formal or expressed, but may be inferred from the circumstances, or it may be implied by the conduct of the parties. Both Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow attempted to convince Melanie Gibb to either not cooperate with police or to provide false information to the police. At this point, they were married. In terms of finding probable cause that an overt act was committed, this court watched itself a video of Lori, at this time now, Lori Daybell, telling police officers that J.J. Vallow was in Arizona with Melanie Gibb. And then through a phone call where Lori Vallow Daybell and Chad Daybell were present, you heard Lori admit to that when she said she did what she felt the Lord was instructing her to do. Your Honor, for purposes of probable cause, the state has met its burden on all 4 felony counts, both counts of concealment and both counts of conspiracy to conceal. And we'd ask that this court bind Mr. Daybell over to answer in district court.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Mr. Pryor.
Thank you, Judge. Judge, in this particular case, we have 4 counts, and we have 2 identifiable children. The testimony, according to this prosecuting attorney, is that Mr. Daybell was married to Ms. Vallow. That doesn't provide anything. Not only doesn't it provide an overt act, it doesn't provide an agreement. Marriage is not an overt act towards a conspiracy, and marriage is not an agreement to conceal or to conspire. In addition, what they have is they have Mr. Daybell making a comment to a police officer. That is not an overt act to conspire, or an agreement to conspire as well. And then what they have is they have an obscure text message that says, I burned some items in the fire pit and I buried a raccoon. Now, they can suggest whatever they want with that, but there's been no indication of any evidence that this act took place on the 9th or the 22nd or 23rd or whatever day it was. And quite honestly, Judge, they don't even come close on the concealment of Tylee. They don't even come close on the concealment of JJ. And the conspiracy, they lack the agreement. And quite honestly, Judge, if this is what the evidence is in terms of an overt act, I would submit to the court that I understand the burden in a preliminary hearing, but they aren't even close on the conspiracy in either suggestion that in either case in regards to an overt act plus an agreement. I'm respectfully asking the court to dismiss the charges. They haven't met their burden, and I don't believe they have provided any near the type of evidence that is necessary to even overcome that small threshold. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Pryor. The court is going to take a recess. I'm going to review my notes, collect my thoughts. I will make a ruling here today momentarily. It will be a few moments, a few minutes, and then we'll come back in, and I'll do that on the record orally. We'll be in recess until that time.
All rise.
Thank you. Please be seated. We're back on the record in CR 2220-755, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. The court took a brief recess after all the evidence and closing arguments had been presented to it. The court notes that the reason we hold a preliminary hearing is to establish probable cause. The obligation of the magistrate is to determine whether or not probable cause has been shown pursuant to Rule 5.1 of the Idaho Criminal Rules. It designates that if a magistrate finds that a public offense has been committed and that there is probable or sufficient cause to believe that the defendant committed the offense, the magistrate must immediately require the defendant to answer in district court. The court finds, after reviewing all of the testimony that has been presented here, as well as exhibits 1 through 31, as well as the argument that has been made by both the state's defense and the state's attorney and the defense attorney, the court finds that the state has met its burden of probable cause, and I find that there is probable or sufficient cause to believe that the defendant, Chad Daybell, committed the offenses counts 1 through 4 as designated in the amended criminal complaint. I will bind the defendant over to the district court, and there will be an arraignment set on August 21st at 9 a.m. That will be in front of Judge Boyce. It's my understanding that will be held remotely via Zoom, but I will leave that up to Judge Boyce to decide that. So that will take care of the findings here today. It's my understanding there's also one final issue that the state as well as defense would like to take up. Is that correct, Mr. Wood?
I can put it for that. Yes, Your Honor. Just a stipulation that the defense and the state have entered into that we will waive any deadline for the filing of a transfer of trial for at least 60 days after the date of arraignment.
Okay. Mr. Pryor, it's my understanding that the stipulation isn't that a transfer of trial venue can take place, but that the deadline to file that motion, if one is going to be filed by either you or the state, is 60 days from today's date. Is that correct?
That is correct, Judge, and I want to make it clear that that motion for transfer of trial, there are actually two types. There's transfer within the judicial district and transfer outside of the judicial district, and we are not specifying in the event we choose to file a motion for change venue, or the state does, that we are not limiting ourselves to this judicial district. We could pursue it outside the judicial district as well. Thank you, Judge.
The court notes that a stipulation has been reached. It's been put here on the record between the state and the defense. I will honor that stipulation. It will be ordered that 60 days from today's date will be the deadline for either the state or the defense to file a motion to transfer the location of the trial within or without District 7 here in the state of Idaho. With that, is there anything else we need to take up here today, Mr. Wood?
Not from the state.
Mr. Pryor?
Not from the defense, Judge. Thank you for your consideration.
I appreciate the zealous representation that has been taking place here today. I'm very impressed with the attorneys, the argument that has been made, as well as the investigation. The court will be in recess. Thank you all.
All right.
You've been listening to the preliminary hearing of Chad Daybell, parts 1 through 13. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any piece of this compelling court testimony as we prepare for the trial of Lori Daybell in the coming weeks. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.